So, in less than a week, my blog will be 25 years old. And I just posted something about that on my blog. And I said, if it were a person, it would be able to rent a car. I remember when I turned 25, that was the big deal. And other than that, you know, I'm not sure how else to market. I mean, we can't actually, the blog won't go out and rent a car. But in doing the review for this event, part of it was of getting the email subscription thing going was to reconnect back with the origins of scripting news. Because in the very earliest days, this was when the web was so new that, it wouldn't have had any impact at all, to be clear, if it hadn't gone out through email. And it had a lot of impact in the early days. That was the thing that, that was the carrot that drew me into it. I would have been drawn into it anyway because I love publishing software. I mean, it's really been sort of the common denominator of sharing ideas, communicating. I used to call it communication with a big C to distinguish it from the communication software at the computer-to-computer level, which would be a little c, very important. It wasn't until we got the little c communication sorted out that the big C communication could even begin. And if you go back and look at the early posts, the very first posts, I guess the first few were just sort of like tapping on the microphone. Hey, you know, does this work? I had a script that I had written on my Macintosh that would send emails to groups of eight, or was it 11? Or maybe it started out as eight and grew to 11. I don't actually have any of the emails from that period, and I've put out a request for anybody who has them. I'd just love to see what they look like. I remember it said at the top, amusing rants from Dave Weiner's desktop, and it had the date, I think, underneath that, and then it used a format that was a precursor to Markdown, actually. Some of the same conventions, different, some differences. And so at first it was just, let's see if this actually can work at a sort of technical level. And I put out an announcement. A friend of mine, Mark Cantor, was having a product rollout. And so the first message I put out was, hey, you know, this is where the product rollout's going to be, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I followed that up with, let me just actually go here, make absolutely sure that I've got this right. So to see the very first posts, you'd go to scripting.com/DaveNet. Right. Yes. So the next one was a follow-up from the announcement, 10 things that Mark Cantor had said at his press conference. Mark was a leader in what was then called multimedia. And actually, he was the leader and quite an influential person. And multimedia meant using things other than text, really. You know, music and sound, other kinds of sound and video. Mark called it visualization. It took some selling to convince people that computers could be used for things other than, just email and stuff like that. And I guess what Mark was really arguing for was basically YouTube and a lot of other things that sort of link to it. So anyway, so I had that, and then I had Mark's 10 things. And the next one is called Letter to Canavino. Jim Canavino, I think. Yes, Jim Canavino was the head of the IBM personal computer division. And I had been going to tech industry conferences. This was at Agenda 95. It was October 13th, 1994 was the date on this. And I had gotten up and made a little speech slash asked a question when Canavino spoke at Agenda 95, and I proposed something, and I followed it up with a letter. I didn't give a whole speech, just had an idea. And I followed it up with a letter to Canavino, and of course, I never heard anything back. And I thought, well, you know, I've got this sitting here. He's obviously not going to respond. There was nothing proprietary or, you know, confidential about the thing that I put in the email. And so I decided, well, I've got this nice little channel here. Let's just use it for this and see what happens. And it sparked a debate. And it was interesting because the people were responding to the emails almost as if the emails were sent to them personally. And that gave me more ideas. And the next one I wrote was I had an idea about what the future of PDAs were. PDAs were personal digital assistants. I believe it was a term that was coined by John Sculley at Apple. Remember, this was the mid-90s at this point. And, well, what did PDAs turn out to be? They turned out to be phones, iPhones, smartphones, whatever you want to call them, Android phones. And so everybody was trying to figure out what did this look like? And people were saying, you know, they're just going to be, follow the analogy. People thought that personal computers would be limited versions of mainframes. And they didn't. They turned out to be fully capable computers, capable of existing completely without mainframes. And so they extrapolated and said, well, PDAs therefore will be, you know, we don't want to make that mistake again. And so PDAs will be fully capable computers. I guess my problem with that was, how do I enter data into this thing? And they weren't good data entry devices to, I mean, for me, they still aren't. I'm amazed at how people touch type on their phones. I would say that that's no longer true. So both sides were right on that one long term. Short term, I was right. I said, no, these things are going to have to be tethered to personal computers in order for them to work. And in fact, that's still right, that my iPhone doesn't really do much unless it's, well, let's be careful about that. It does actually do quite a bit without being hooked up to my Macintosh, my desktop Macintosh, but it still wants to be hooked up to update it. Well, actually, that was something I learned the other day. It wasn't able to update itself, the iPhone, through iTunes, and it gave me this horrible error message, and it sent me to pages on the web that were just completely impossible to decipher. Until I finally gave it, I thought, well, let's just go to the App Store and see if I can download a new version of the OS there. And sure enough, I could. Could have saved me all the trouble and said, look, you don't need to use iTunes anymore to do this. It actually can do it on its own. So both sides are right of that. And I guess the, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the seventh piece was called Bill Gates versus the Internet. And I'd have to say, that was the moment. It wasn't the moment that I got it with the big revelation, because I think that happened earlier for me. But it was the first time I was able to put it in words for other people, is that, you know, something actually weird and powerful is happening here. And you can feel it. And so can I. And this is what it is. And the idea really was what we would later call Sources Go Direct. I was a person who had deep knowledge of the tech industry. I was of the tech industry. I had just founded a company and taken it through acquisition and then to IPO, and then founded another company. And that one had pretty much failed at that point, called Userland. Failed from an entrepreneurial standpoint, not from a technology standpoint. I always have to be careful about that. Userland was a very successful company from a tech standpoint. However, it lost a shitload of money. and that was for a lot of reasons. And I won't go into those now. What I do want to share today is the... I don't think I ever actually said this in a post. If I did, I'm not sure how well it would have been understood. But... up until the point that I started writing these things that would later be called blog posts, I had this idea that, you know, I was generating all these ideas and they could all turn into products. And therefore, I should hold on to them because this was really my work product. This was the thing that made me unique, was that I understood things for whatever reason, not everything, but some things. I understood them before everybody else did. And I had tracked this, you know, put my stake in the ground and said, okay, let's see how this turns out. This is what I think is going to happen. And I'd done it enough that I was fairly confident that I was had a pretty good idea of how communications with a big C was going to evolve. And in hindsight, some of the things I believed haven't yet come to fruition. That's the way I would put it. Still think they're about to happen. But many of them did. I mean, you know, people like to say, I don't know what they say, but whatever you say about podcasting and blogging and RSS and the rest of that stuff that I led the development of, I knew, I mean, we could have had an argument at a Future of News conference about podcasting, and we could have had that in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2004, 2007, 2012, 2015, 2017. We could have had it any one of those years. And the argument that I would have gotten back is, well, what's the business model? And I would have said, I don't honestly know that there is a business model here, just that this is going to happen. People are going to do this. And it just goes to show that sometimes things happen even when nobody knows what the business model is going to be. In fact, the web was like that. Google, a company that had no idea how it was going to make money when it started, and it became quite a big thing before it had a business model, and then boom, the business model was just huge. And of course, that's not true of everything, you know. So extrapolate to say that because it worked in that one case means it will work in every case, that's not a reasonable sort of logic. But the thing that changed for me, and maybe it's changed for other people, but maybe not, is that I realized that, okay, I come up with all these ideas, but I'm only going to be able to execute on a very small fraction of them. And so is it smart really to hold on to them? So, for example, I saw myself as an independent developer that had been basically crushed out of the market. The PC market had grown in a certain way, and then the big companies were, you know, fighting over who was going to control the future, as big companies often do, always do, really. And I felt, and everybody else felt, that the day of the little developer was over. And people would write articles about this, that, you know, it's no longer the day of the little developer. And so I don't know, this is where I was at. And I was excited about the new medium. And I hadn't quite connected all the dots together yet, but I decided that there's really no point holding on to these ideas. If I'm not going to be able to execute on them, why hold on? So what I had suggested was that IBM and Apple should combine their efforts. This is, by the way, when Steve Jobs was out of Apple. He'd been kicked out. He was running Next. Apple was flailing in a sequence of CEOs that had really little idea. They didn't have a feel for Apple, and they didn't have a feel for the users, and they didn't understand the phenomenon that personal computers were. So their operating system, however, whatever it was that was languishing, Mac OS was in trouble. But it was still the better of the two operating systems. IBM had this new operating system, OS 2, which it had co-developed with Microsoft, that because it was new, it didn't have a base of software. That was the thing the Mac had that was precious. It had a strong base of software, and it just needed to be managed. And it needed to have, I mean, it needed help. And a company like IBM, with its strength and its, you know, financial stability and its big name, and had everything that Apple didn't have. Apple was, you know, was a little ship that was cast out on the ocean and flailing about, and had its developers. And the web really was a shot of adrenaline for the Mac. And my theory was, just put these two together, and IBM, say goodbye to OS 2, make really great Macintoshes, and make them in volume, and make them cheap, but make them beautiful, make them attractive, and you know, what eventually became the iMac, really. And so I said, okay, well, you know what? What do I have to lose putting that idea? It was just a sequence. And I forgot over the years that there was a time when I didn't put my ideas out there and I held on to them. And I think that might have been the biggest thing, the biggest single thing, line that I crossed in switching from being a independent software developer, but one with limited to only communicating through journalism, through the journalists, to a person who had his own voice and could speak directly without anybody being a middleman. And of course, that was the constant theme. I said it was sources go direct, and that's exactly what that was. Previously, I had been a source. That was my way of getting access to journalism, to publishing, to having my ideas out there. And it would always be sort of trading things off. I would give them a quote, or I would leak something to them about something that I had been, you know, that I had heard or whatever. And that would earn me a little bit of credit with the reporters, and then they might treat my press release a little, you know, this is how it worked. It was a terrible system, very inefficient. And what it was replaced with was something that, at least in the first years, was vastly better. It meant that whatever I put my name onto, wherever I had a quote, I could explain myself fully. I could say what I totally meant. And now, might not mean anybody reads it, but at least I could say it and it would have integrity. And also there was this feeling that if you're not going to be able to develop it, why not share it? And I think that that also answers the question a lot of people had when they were reading my blog in the early days is, well, who the hell does he think he is? And that's it. That's all I think I am. I'm a person who gets some ideas and doesn't mind sharing them. And it always comes with a caveat of, you know, your mileage may vary. And also, if you have another idea, another opinion, another view that you know, is respectful. This was a big deal, by the way, in the early years of blogging, was can we have a little respect? And I made Aretha Franklin with her song. Was the theme song, really, of blogging. It was my hope. It was what there wasn't enough of. Respect means that you just listen to somebody and you respond to the things that they say, and you don't get personal about it. You don't try to provoke a fight. You're just having a collegial conversation here, and you know, nobody takes themselves too seriously. You know, all of that is part and parcel to the blogging ethos. I don't know. There's a lot more to say. The early years were great. There were middle years that were great too, and then we had a long period where we were kind of adrift at sea because of the growth of the silos, and things seem to be coming back a little bit now, and so that's exciting. So there's your beginning. Hopefully, maybe this is all I'll have to say about the 25 years of blogging that I've done. So there you have it. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.